Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everybody and welcome to episode 80 of Internet Marketing. Today would normally be an interview, but because we've got so many questions and answers, we're doing another questions and answers session. I've got with me in the studio Mr. Kelvin Newman.
Hello, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whatever time it is, wherever you are in the world.
Fantastic. And I have with me a number of questions.
Yeah.
Make them sound like people, don't I? I have with me a number of questions on paper. See, you will hear a slidey sound as I slide them into position to read them. And the first question is from Gareth Dixon.
Yep.
Dear Kelvin, or hi Kelvin, I'm enjoying the premium content. Well worth it, thank you very much. He goes on to say, thank you for that, by the way.
Kind words.
It is, yeah. He goes on to say, I'd be grateful for your advice. Not sure if any of this may be relevant questioning for your podcast, brackets, apologies if you've already covered this, brackets. I work for a holiday cottage letting agent, that's www.cornishcottageholidays.co.uk, and I'm involved with marketing and have a basic understanding of web development. My internet marketing education is down to listening to you, exclamation mark. And we have access to a web design agency. The issue, we do well driving traffic to our site through natural positioning, yet we only convert about 2% of visitors. My thinking is that people are searching for, quote, holiday cottage in Cornwall, quote, or similar, than they are after a specific product. I also think our site is quite good at getting people to the product. The product they are after once they are at the homepage. Yet we are still converting just 2%. Do you have any top tips on boosting conversions / keeping the site sticky? What's the general feeling on those, quote, why are you leaving, quote, pop-ups? Do they have a positive result? Many thanks, Gareth.
Ooh. Yeah, so it's an interesting question. I mean, to start off with, I'd say 2% conversion rate isn't that terrible because you've got to bear in mind that there's going to be people just browsing your site who aren't that serious or are very early in the kind of buying cycle. But I think that there's always, with conversion rates, the whole point is that there's always ways you can improve them. So you should be looking to explore ways of improving them. I mean, the first tip I'd say, and we mentioned it a few times in the past, is to use Google Website Optimizer, which allows you to kind of like A/B test different versions of your web pages and website. So to see if, you know, maybe if you put a, if you are talking about any of these pop-ups or thinking of leaving, you know, kind of notifications, you can test two different versions and see which ones convert the best. So with all of these recommendations, it will be different on every site, so test it. But here are some kind of ideas that generally I think are worth considering. Those pop-ups that say, you know, why are you leaving, please stay, begging you to do it. If you look at the results of those, then there are case studies out there which prove that they're successful. However, what I would say is they're probably successful in getting more people to take the desired action, but it's what is the impact they're having on those other people who aren't converting. So say you get 100 people visiting your site. At the moment, Gareth's saying he's getting 2 people inquiring. Maybe using one of these pop-ups might be able to take you up to 3 or 4%, maybe two, you know, 1 or 2 extra people signing, you know, inquiring. But those other sort of, you know, 95, 96 people, they're not necessarily have converted at this point in time, but next 100 bunch of people, they might be one of the people who are converting. So if you annoy people now, it might have an impact on your conversion rates in the future. So that's one of the dangers sometimes of just looking at very short-term measures of success. So, my conversion rate jumped up, like, you know, A versus B, B is better. But that pop-up might be turning off a huge number of people who would have come back or contacted you over the phone or, you know, got a brochure in a kind of offline environment as well. So yeah, it's not always quite simple, but if you look at the case studies, they work. So it's kind of about making a judgment call. Is that short-term gain worth the potential long-term risk? In a lot of cases, it probably is, because it's, you know, worth getting as many people to do what you want them to do as possible. Other top tips really is just kind of making sure at the end of every page, you've got a clear next action point. Because too often people can kind of browse down your page, read through it, and then go, oh, well, what do I do now? Oh, I'll click the back button and go to Google or do whatever it is. Whereas, so maybe if they've looked at one property, maybe have other similar properties. I know I'm looking for a house at the moment. I actually put my mortgage application today, Andy, which is all very scary. I don't want to know what the outcome of all that will be. But so I've been looking around at a lot of property sites when you're looking to buy. And one thing they do very well is they'll say, okay, well, you've looked at a two-bedroom house in this location. Well, once I've finished looking at that page, if I've not inquired, which is their conversion point, they've got like three or four other similar properties. Their picture of them, click-through link to keep me on the site, to keep me within the site rather than disappearing off to something else.
So it's the kind of classic Amazon people that bought this also looked at this or bought these as well.
Yeah, and you can do some of that automatically. So if you've got a blog or you're using like WordPress as a CMS, there's some plugins you can use. There's one that I recommend called Yet Another Related Post plugin, or YARP it's called. And that one does it automatically. But actually, if you've not got that many pages, it's probably worth doing kind of by hand. You know, go look at every major page of your site, look in Google Analytics, see which are your top exit pages, so the pages where people are leaving your site. Look at that page and read through and think, okay, well, where could I go next from this page? Am I signaling that strong enough to the people on the site? And if you're not, try introducing some new kind of extra ways. And that'll keep people on the site longer. It won't necessarily make them convert more often, but hopefully if they'll end up in the right page, they're more likely to as well. And simple things as well. One thing that I've seen quite a few websites do recently that I quite like the look of is kind of a scrolling contact us button. So because you kind of always want the contact details to be nearby, and the classic way of doing that is you kind of have it in the top corner, the bottom corner, along the bottom. So at the screen, hopefully there's always somewhere that someone can click to contact you. But you're seeing quite a few of these ones where they're kind of the
feedback. Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah. It's the floats on the right or left-hand side and always stays in the same position.
Yeah, which can be a bit annoying in some cases, but I actually quite like the look of, because it makes it easy and people can always see where that next step is. So if you've got a clear, like maybe in Gareth's case, it's download a brochure. Maybe he has a button that's always floating there that's a download a brochure. It pops open like a light box type thing. You put in your details and you convert. So no one's ever more than a small mouse movement from being able to convert.
Was it you, Kelvin, that was telling me that conversion, things you can do to improve conversion are much more, have a much bigger result than things you can do to get people to the site in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, there is a stat, and I'm terrible at mental arithmetic, so I can't work this out, but it's that kind of, so in Gareth's cases there, say he's getting 100 visits a month. If he completes his conversion rate by, you know, so he goes from a 2% conversion rate to a 4% conversion rate. He goes from getting 2 people per 100 to 4 people per 100. That's a relatively small change. If someone said a 2% increase in your conversion rate, so okay, that's not too bad. That's fairly achievable. But to do that, if he kept the current conversion rate, you'd have to double his traffic. So he'd have to increase his traffic by, you know, that much. So particularly when you're kind of in double figure conversion rates, it's small changes that you need to try and get these numbers up there. So yeah, it's worth spending some time trying to improve conversion rates. Don't just worry about getting more traffic, worry about what that traffic's doing when it visits your site.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that question, you're Kelvin.
Yeah.
This is from Gareth.
Yes.
Thanks, Gareth, for that question, as he slides a piece of paper away. Next question from Elliot Mist. Who I think is from Australia, judging from his email address.
Yep.
Hi, Kelvin. I have just started a new internet marketing position at a mining recruitment company. We have a huge database of 80,000 strong, but within it can be broken up into different segments, such as different skill sets, brackets, workforce, accounting, geologist, brackets, location, age, active, non-active, etc. We'll be attacking the database with email campaigns tailored to each specific segment. Some email campaigns will be up to 8,000 emails at a time. Do you still recommend MailChimp as an email marketing app to use with all this in mind? We're looking for a powerful app that can deliver, track, and measure results. Measurement of each campaign's success is critical, as I need to report and present to management. Thanks for all your help and answers. Regards, Elliot. Well, thanks for that, Elliot.
Cool,
what
yeah.
What are your thoughts, Kelvin?
Yeah, I know Elliot's a... I think the question came off the back of... I know Elliot's a premium subscriber, and we did kind of an introduction to MailChimp for people who'd not done any email marketing before. And Elliot asked the question, and he mentioned this also in the premium forum as well, that, you know, MailChimp's great. It's a great free tool, but is it really up to that kind of enterprise standard email marketing? There's a few options out there. So there's MailChimp. We talk about Pure 360 because they're based down here in Brighton as well. Campaign Monitor and a variety of them there. There's pros and cons to each of them. Personally, I prefer MailChimp. I know Daniel Rolls, who's kind of a bit of our resident email marketing expert in the podcast, is a big fan of MailChimp as well. It can do all those things that Elliot's after. You can break it down into all those different elements. Mm. But MailChimp is kind of a... it's built around being available to lots and lots of people, so it's a mass market offering.
Yeah.
Now, it's got all the functionality that Elliot needs there, but whether necessarily it's in the, you know... I think with a campaign like he's talking about, the time and the money and the value is going to come from the analysis of the data rather than the data itself. So I know Google Analytics, Avinash Kushak, who he interviewed, I don't know, probably a year or so ago.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah, he makes a big fuss about actually most companies spend far too much money and time worrying about what they can measure using the piece of software and then don't spend any money on someone's time to analyze it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say in Elliot's case, I think MailChimp is more than sufficient, and as would be Pure 360 or Campaign Monitor. We've got a page on the premium. On the premium site, we have a recommended suppliers guide, which is free that anyone can look at and just see the people we've recommended previously. And in there, we've got maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 email marketing companies that email marketing software companies that we've worked with in the past or have had listeners recommend. Most of them are able to do that. MailChimp is. But what I would say is Elliot needs to find some of his or some of his team's time to kind of really analyze that data. So maybe doing a few trial campaigns and then learning from what the data provides rather than just kind of having a great report at the end is what can you use to inform you. So yeah, MailChimp can do that, but it's the time on it rather than the tool that I think is the important thing really when it comes to using data.
So analyze your data. You reckon there's a lot of value in that?
Well, that's it. And I mean, with a lot of email marketing solutions, you can do a lot of trial campaigns. Mm. So how many people did Elliot say he had on his list? I think it was sort of like
80,000.
80,000.
I think it's 80,000. Yeah.
So rather than just sending out one email or two, maybe you're going crazy and you're putting out 4 different variations of the emails there. Actually break it down. So for each of those different categories that he's got, send out a trial campaign to maybe 50, 60 people.
Mm.
See what works for those ones. And then you roll out the campaign that works best. And MailChimp will allow you to do that sort of automatically as well. But I think it's the personal human touch that will really give you the clever insight.
Okay, Elliot. Well, hopefully you found that useful. Let's move on to the next one. Paper is slidey noise. This one is from...
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Lyndon Oliver. Hi, Kelvin. I'm a regular listener to your podcast. First of all, I'd like to thank you for all the great content that you offer, and each week has some really useful info. Thanks for that, Lyndon. I have a client that has purchased a number of domain names that are specific to their business of renting groundwork machinery. Mm-hmm. They have a main company site and have now purchased domains such as used-mower.co.uk, bandit-chipper.co.uk, etc. They have asked me the following. Would it be possible to create a one-pager for each of the new domains with a link to the relevant part of the main site, or would it be better to create a link straight to the site without the one page? Do you think this would drive much more traffic to the website, and would these links appear high on Google searches if someone typed in, quote, used mower, quote, for instance? As far as I'm aware, Google does not like individual pages being produced to get the user to link through. I have had a search on Google, and the consensus seems to be in favour of a simple 301 redirect. However, if this is done, is there any advantage of owning these domains other than the fact that competitors can't get them? Thanks for your time, and if you can offer any advice, that would be great. Thanks. Lyndon.
Yeah, that used to be the case. So there was a tactic that was used quite a lot, which was known as doorway pages, where you'd kind of create a page that was really
doorway pages.
Yeah, really well optimised for a particular term, and then the whole purpose of that website was to get you to click through to another website. And the shorthand version is that Google didn't like that. It came down on it really hard. It didn't really work anymore. So there's an argument in that case against microsites, i.e. a one pager, because
was that the other name for them, Kelvin, microsites?
Microsites get used in this kind of, and people talk about using microsites for SEO, and there is, it's not one of those decisions where there's a one right answer, one wrong answer. There's kind of a combination of the two that works here. Now, I wouldn't advise that anyone go out and buy up hundreds of domains, all of which had different keyword variations, bung up one page, and the only purpose of that page is to link to their main site. That's not going to work. But what they said there, Lyndon said, that's very true, is if you own a domain name and 301 it to your site, the only benefit you're getting from that is the potential that someone types that in and then ends up in your website. So if you're using hyphenated ones or not the, you know, not the obvious domain extension like a .biz or something, it's very unlikely you're going to get any typing traffic there. So if you've bought them, he is right. The only real benefit there is the fact that your competitors can't own them. However, there is a sort of middle ground here, which is at the moment, and it's been the case for probably a year or so now, and a lot of people don't know how long this is going to last, but Google, particularly Bing and Yahoo, don't, in comparison, absolutely love exact match domain names. So if you're going after one particular keyword and your domain name is an exact, so it's, I don't know, you know, blue trumpet, I don't know, you wouldn't buy a blue trumpet, but say everyone was really interested,
the mind of Kelvin Newman,
so yeah, say it, there was a big trend that everyone wanted to buy blue trumpets and you owned bluetrumpet.com, there's a good chance if you build up a small website around that that's focused around that term, it's not that highly competitive, you'll be able to rank for that.
Now, Kelvin, hyphenated or not hyphenated?
I prefer non-hyphenated domain names because they seem a little bit less spammy. Google are quite good at being able to tell the difference where one word stops and another one doesn't. But that's kind of a matter of taste rather than a matter of Google policy, really. So what I would say is if some of those domains that he's bought or that his client has bought have significant search volumes in their own right, there is an argument you should consider building a little website around them. And I'm not saying one page, like a 5-10 page website, which kind of is absolutely focused on that topic. You can build a few links to it and get it to rank on that term, and ideally have its own conversion point within that site rather than sending someone off to another website. That can work. However, for most people, that's not the most effective use of their time, because if they've got to build 20 different websites, maybe that'll take them a couple of months to do. They've got to write all that content out. In a lot of cases, they would have been better spending that time on the original site. However, if you've got one website that's currently number one for all your main keywords, really doing really, really well, and you're looking for that next step, then maybe exploring some of these microsites might be a good way of doing it. or just as a little way to trial a new market, i.e. bunging up a little website, see what happens, get it a few directory links, see if it starts to rank, and then invest some real attention in it. So microsites don't always work, and they might not work forever, but at the moment you can bung them up quite quickly and do quite well off the back of that if it matches the keyword exactly.
So a microsite as opposed to a doorway site?
Yeah, I think the distinction
so there is a difference.
Yeah, in my distinction, a microsite is that it's kind of freestanding and will work on its own. And the visitor of that site would be perfectly happy visiting that site. You're not trying to mislead them. I don't think anyone should be trying to do that. It's a kind of, say, okay, so say we are, say you're a fitness supplier. So you supply fitness equipment. And me and Andy both use, you know, exercise balls as work desk chairs. So maybe there's an argument if you could get exercise desk chair or something like that, you could produce a little microsite dedicated to that specific topic, explaining why you would use it, why you wouldn't use it, what's good for it, what things you might want to bear in mind. It's a freestanding website, works very well, and on that site it might be possible to buy that product.
Yeah,
right. That's supplementary to your main website and kind of freestanding and works perfectly well there. But instead, if you're just doing it, buying loads up, bunging up 200 words worth of copy and hope, getting your fingers crossed that Google are going to love it, it's unlikely it's going to work. So they've got to be some real sort of investment in those websites to really get the value from them.
Okay, brilliant. So I hope that's of help, Lyndon. Let's move on to the final question.
Yes.
This is from Ivan Wainwright, who appears to be from the UK, judging from his domain name. Hi, Kelvin. I've been listening to the IMPC podcast for some time now. Excellent work. Definitely one of the best podcasts around. Thank you very much for that, Ivan. I've just seen the following video, and he's given us a big long link, stating that Google does not use the keywords meta tag. So my question is, do other search engines use them? Is it worth spending time on optimizing them? Maybe you can cover it in a future podcast. Thanks, Ivan.
Yeah,
it's a good question.
Yes, so yeah, I'll drop.
It's one of those questions that I keep asking in my head and never vocalise it.
Yeah, no, it's a good good question. I'll drop a link to the video. I think it's presumably Matt Cutts talking about it. And basically, so there used to be three main meta elements that you'd edit from an SEO perspective: the title tag, which isn't technically a meta tag but gets lumped in there; your meta description, so that's your kind of 150 characters that you've got to play with. That normally appears as the second and third line in your Google search results. And then your meta keywords, which don't appear anywhere on the search results and they're not visible to the user typically when they view the site. Now, it used to be meta keywords were back in the days of AltaVista, and that was the main way you'd get to number one.
It takes me back.
And it was one of those ones where literally if you put Britney Spears, and that's probably before Britney Spears even, but if you put something like that, you know, Britney Spears sex, you know, casinos in your keywords, if you put that in your keyword tag, you go straight to number one for them. Admittedly, no one was really searching back in those days, but that was the way it worked. But it was open to so much spamming, really, that very, very quickly it got turned down as a ranking factor, to the extent that Google have stated that they don't look at it. I think both Yahoo and MSN have stated to some extent that they don't look at it as well. And from tests, people are showing that they're not even spidering it yet, let alone using it as a ranking factor. So
interesting.
He's right to say there that Ivan, that it's not that important. Having said that, I do still use them because I think sometimes they're quite helpful when you're looking back at your, so say you've got 100 pages on your site, you've specified all your title tags, you've specified all your meta descriptions, and then you bung them up on your site, and then 6 months later you're like, well, what keyword did I actually try and optimize this page for?
Yes,
sometimes it can be quite good to keep reminding you what you've done there, but that does open you up to other people seeing. But the way I tend to do it is I write my title tags and I cut and paste that into the keyword title column in my Excel spreadsheet, remove the ands, put in a couple of commas, put in a couple of spaces, so it is a list of keywords rather than just a sentence like you might get in a title tag, and leave it at that. So literally it takes less than a minute for a whole website to do them with a quick find and replace. I think if that's the amount of time you're spending, it's probably worth it because it's not going to do any harm. But what I wouldn't be doing is spending anything more than, I don't know, maybe half an hour on a whole website's meta keywords tags, because it's just not going to be worth the time or effort. So, yeah.
Yeah, because potentially you could have different keywords for each individual page, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, and it's the sequence as well. We've talked in a couple of episodes back about, like, when you're writing a title tag, it's those words in any order.
Mm.
So if you had, it was when we were talking about paper cup holders, wasn't
yeah.
it? Mm. And we were saying, well, you could have cardboard coffee cup holders that would also do for coffee cup holders, water, paper, you know, all the combinations that you had of yes. those various yeah. terms yeah. there. It didn't really matter as long as you had all of them there. Whereas that meta keywords might give you the opportunity to say, okay, well, we went for cardboard cup holders, we went for cardboard coffee cup holders, we went for you know, recyclable cup holders, and you've got all of those different ones there, but they might not be, you might have 20 keywords for a page, but you've only got one title tag because you've got the different combinations and orders and sequences that you can go for.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it can be quite handy from that point of view.
Brilliant. Well, that wraps the questions. Now, of course, if you want to ask a question, please send an email to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com.
Yeah.
And also, don't forget our phone line.
Yes, yeah, we've got the phone line number. Yeah, that's on the outro of the show as well. And plus, anyone who's a premium subscription member, at premium.internetmarketingpodcast.org, we've got a little forum there. And that lots of people have been asking questions there, mm-hmm. which works quite well, actually, because, you know, we've always got an angle on how we can answer those questions, but actually a lot of the other members of the community have been going through similar situations themselves.
Mm.
So quite often have some pretty good insight there as well. So that's a nice little bonus for anyone who signed up as a premium subscriber. So if you are going, check out the forum. It works out quite well.
Fantastic. Well, it's goodbye from me, Andy White.
And goodbye from... No, goodbye from me. It's goodbye from me, Kelvin Newman.
See you next time. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.